love to see that this is something that people now want to do, that there are students who are excited to become animal rights attorneys. I mean, we need them. We don't need any more like entertainment attorneys and corporate attorneys. We need attorneys speaking up for animals and fighting for them.
My guest today is animal rights activist Shannon Keith. Despite her soft-spoken approach, Shannon is a force to be reckoned with. As one of the first animal rights attorneys ever, and one of the first to create and teach animal rights law, Shannon has been hugely instrumental in getting universities and law schools to offer courses and degrees in animal rights law. And further working in her capacity as an attorney, she's been instrumental in the passage of multiple laws designed to protect those who cannot advocate for themselves, including the landmark legislation passed by Congress last year that eliminated a federal mandate for animal testing on new drugs for FDA approval. And that had been in place since 1938. But there is still a long way to go. Shannon is also a filmmaker, having produced three powerful animal rights documentaries, and she is president and the founder of Beagle Freedom Project, whose crystal clear mission is to educate, legislate, and liberate. And that they do. If Beagle Freedom Project sounds familiar to you, you may have seen the media coverage when Prince Harry and Meghan Markle recently adopted a 10-year-old mother beagle who'd endured animal testing for years. Now, I think you'll learn a great deal about how to make systemic change in this episode. And I think you'll also just really enjoy getting to know my guest, Shannon Keith. Hello, Shannon.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to How We Change the World podcast. I'm really happy to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited to talk to you. I've been hearing about the Beagle Freedom Project for many, many years. I haven't known that much about it. So I'm eager to learn about it, eager to learn about your work in animal, reducing, eliminating animal testing. And we will definitely get into that as a sort of the focus of the show. I think a lot of people are a little bit naive about animal testing, whether we need it, if it's still going on and all those things. So it's definitely, I think, something that we all need to be further educated on. So I definitely will look to you for some of that education. But I mean, the scope of your work is actually substantial and far reaching. So it's not only about preventing animal testing, but, we'll talk about all the things you do, but it does seem that as a person who their entire life is engaged in animal welfare, are you following your passion? It seems to me like you are the epitome of a person who is doing that. Would you describe it that way?
Yeah, definitely. You hit the nail on the head. Yeah, I am following my passion. It's really a dream come true is my life. I learned about animal suffering and everything when I was really in college and decided what I wanted to do with my life and just went after it.
Really?
And,
really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So as a child, were you very close with animals? Was that something that was always of interest to you? Or did you not until college come to that?
Always. I always loved animals. I always wanted to care for them. I always had animals growing up. But I didn't really know what I wanted to, let's say, do in life.
Right.
What my career would be, let's say. How I was going to make money. That type of thing. But I had a passion for them. And when I was in college, I learned that animals were considered chattel in the law. Chattel means property. And that really disturbed me. And when I learned that, I decided that was going to be my life's mission, that I was going to change that law and go to law school and be an animal rights lawyer. I just made it up in my head that I was going to make up this arena of law called animal rights and change it. And
that's really
my path.
So there was no obviously a law class or a focus on animal rights, but now you're a lawyer who teaches courses in animal rights, correct?
Right.
Yeah. So you were never able to take a course yourself. You had to make it up.
Right. Yeah. At the time, there was a couple of classes. There was one at UCLA and I believe Lewis and Clark called Animal Law. Very few and far between. You know, you had to really look at laws that dated back to like the 1800s when, you know, people would hitch their cow to, you know, a post, you know, and analogize cases like that. But this wasn't animal rights, just kind of animal law in general. So really that's something that I'm kind of proud to say that I started and I'm
My
happy
goodness.
To teach.
You should be proud. That's amazing. So what types of things do you teach in courses? Like what would a title of one of your courses be, for example?
Well, definitely it's animal law in general, right? So people understand like what they can do, what the law is right now. It differs from state to state, what our federal law is when it comes to the protection of animals. And that is also, well, exactly. Yeah. Right. And then, you know, what we can do as activists. So I like to focus on a whole like activist section, right? Because I consider myself an activist. And if you're doing animal rights law, then you have to sort of be an activist in a way, right? Because you're speaking up for those who have no voice. And so no matter what, you are that activist. You're activating for the animals.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
I like to incorporate all that there.
And then is it a rare call or law school that offers those courses, or is it starting to expand in terms of the number of law schools or even undergrads where you might get a course in animal activism or animal rights or animal welfare?
It has really exponentially grown. It's really exciting. Yeah, it's still, you know, from what I've seen, considered, you know, they call it animal law. The curriculum has really grown and expanded to cover those things. I've done a lot of guest teaching courses and still being asked to do those, you know, where we talk about, those types of cases and what people can do to really activate themselves. So it's exciting.
Oh, I can tell that when you talk about it, I can tell that like when you're asked to be a guest, that like guest speaker, is that like a really high spot for you? Cause it seems like you just light up when you talk about it.
Yeah, I love it because I love to see that this is something that people now want to do, that there are students who are excited to become animal rights attorneys. I mean, we need them. We don't need any more like entertainment attorneys and corporate attorneys. We need attorneys speaking up for animals and fighting for them.
Fascinating. Okay. Well, I'm really excited to learn about that. And I wonder if there is some type of a link I could put on here in the show notes or something that would identify where you can study that. Is that something, is there such a list or does it exist of colleges where
law schools? I don't have them put together, but I'm happy to send you something. So if people want to like ask later, you can provide that to them. So
yeah, I think it'd be really helpful rather than everybody going through one by one, especially if you have just a few in your head. So you're not just an attorney. You're an attorney, you're a professor, you're a filmmaker, and you're also founder of and president of the nonprofit Beagle Freedom Project, which we're going to be talking about. Huge, huge and vast array of things that you're involved in. So, yeah, and you do. I was noticing that on the Beagle Freedom Project website, you said you use the law to change the language and the culture of how we view and treat animals. And you do that by using language that encourages companionship rather than ownership. Is just that one pivotal thing to move from thinking and speaking about companionship rather than ownership? Is that kind of the nut of the whole thing?
I'm glad you brought that up because it really is. When we change the way that we speak, it really has a lot to do with moving forward in a more compassionate, expansive way. So when I was really involved in the law. Right now, everything is revolves around Beagle Freedom Project and legislation. But when I was, in the courtroom every day and writing briefs and trying cases, when I wrote those briefs, I made sure to incorporate writing things like companion animal instead of pet, guardian instead of owner. Because when we change our language, we change the way that people think about animals. So when we talk about ownership, that goes to chattel, that goes to animals being a piece of property, something thing that people own, so that they can do whatever they want to that animal. We have to think in terms of these are our family members. These are, our beloved animals who deserve rights. They are sentient beings and deserve all the same rights that we have, and we have to respect them as such.
I education is so important because we are raised in a certain way. And I am of a generation, I think, where animal rights were just not even shouldn't even be talked about. I mean, it's like almost a negative thing to talk about. And of course, it was my own daughter who was born a different way. She just emerged from the womb as an animal lover. And I really had to, even though I'm very people oriented and I'm always helping people and so forth, I had to be taught for many, many years as I watched her grow up and see her not kill anything, even at 18 months, not go down a slide because there was an insect or ride a bike because I know I was actually a little worried about how she was going to make it through life, but she kind of eventually got there. But her pain when she sees, as we were talking about earlier, like just stray dogs on the street down here is so palpable. And it took me a long time, and I had to be educated. And I think that the I don't know why it's the way it is that certain people have to be educated, but I think an entire generation, entire world needs to still be educated about just hearing it. You just have to hear it frequently and be exposed to it until you start to even get it through your thick skull that, yeah, this is a sentient being and you don't own them. You don't, not that you would abuse them, but just that you think differently. I mean, that's just, it comes down to how we think and speak. So I really appreciated you saying that. And I know that, of course, there's a lot of legislation around that. And it reminded me a little bit around about how so many people are working for the environment now and rights of nature and assigning, legal rights to rainforests, rivers, mountains, so that we're not looking at those resources, but as something that we all need to survive and how we all need to work, that we're so interconnected. But I hadn't heard before, like I hadn't thought about that connection between the rights of nature as trees and rivers, but also the rights of animals. I mean, it's the same similar movement going on at the same time, I think. We're just kind of waking up. People like you are helping us wake up. You really are. I mean,
Thank
I
you.
appreciate it. I appreciate it. So I wanted to just take a minute to talk about your three films. So I mentioned I'm not in the country right now, and unfortunately, usually if I interview someone, I try to read what they've written and see if they produce something, but I haven't had access to many of the, I don't know why, but I can't get many of the films here in this country. So can you, I know you've got three films, right? Behind the Mask, Skin Trade, and
Sanctuary.
what's the third one? Sanctuary, yeah, which is hugely important. Are those still films that we can watch? Or are they
Definitely,
still
yeah.
available?
Behind the Mask was my first documentary. It's kind of considered like a cult classic in terms of like the Animal Liberation Front and the underground, and it's very inspirational if you're ready to go fight and smash some windows and break out some animals. No, but I'm joking. But it really like
Well,
if it but
are you?
if I don't know. But yeah, if really it was the time when things were crazy, right? I started making it in 2003 and I finished filming it in 2005. And so the word terrorist was being thrown around
Unbelievably
in
so.
reference, to animal rights activists and environmental activists, and it was very frustrating. I was followed. My garbage was gone through. My mother was followed. My house was surrounded. My house was raided, and it was just
Oh my,
infuriating.
by who raided your home?
By the FBI and the JTTF because I was involved in animal rights activism, and it just was absurd. And I was getting very, very angry, and I wanted to make a
Yeah.
statement. And so
Wow.
I decided to make a movie about it, a documentary about it. And I wanted to make a documentary that showed that these people who break the law to save animals are not terrorists. These are people who are freedom fighters. And as Martin Luther King Jr. would say, these people are freedom fighters.
Yeah.
You have to break the law in order to make change. And I will say that freely as an attorney, as a member of the Bar Association, that, sometimes that has to happen. We have never seen a movement. We've never seen movement in social change. We've never seen great things happen in our society unless laws have been broken. That has to
Well, you
happen
think of,
sometimes.
yeah.
Look at Rosa
Well, you're a
Parks.
good
Look at
example.
those things.
That's what I'm thinking about, Nelson Mandela. I'm there's so many of our heroes have spent, Gandhi have spent so many years in prison.
Right.
And of course Martin Luther King's another example. So yeah, and I think of course that word terrorist was used right after, 9/11. So there was this commingling of, and I wasn't an animal rights activist, but it doesn't take a genius or even a person in the movement to see that there is no connection between someone who's going to, bomb the New York, the Twin Towers, and someone who's freeing animals from. It's just, and it worked. That's a problem. They
Right.
even made me feel like, wait, why are they calling them terrorism? There must be a reason, and
Right.
that's the danger. That's the slow word, like you said earlier. Words matter so much. I know this from, I've
Exactly.
worked in the Middle East a lot and saw who they called what. And I was just like, yeah, I'm here on the ground, not so much what you're saying is true. Like, do you call them terrorists? Do you call them, like you said, freedom fighters? Or do you just, the words are very, can be very dangerous. Okay. We're powerful. So did you do any, were any of, was anything in that first film about the, was anything filmed inside a meat packing or a meat processing plant, or where animals were
I covered the gamut
being,
of
you
all
did.
animal exploitation, so it had to do with all forms of animals and slaughterhouses,
Okay.
vivisection, the exotic pet trade, everything. So.
Yeah. I was, one of the things that got me out, besides my daughter's years of veganism, or vegetarianism at the time, one of the things that actually pushed me over the edge into not wanting to eat animals anymore was a book by Eating Animals, by Jonathan,
Yeah, I read that.
for Safer For. And I saw a video or an interview that he had quite a few years ago, and he was talking about, I don't know why it really struck me that, if you want to go to see how potato chips are made, you can go to the factory. If you want to, like, I used to work at Keebler during college. I took people on tours of the factory. Of course, people, beer, wineries, people want to show how they make their product. But he said, trying to see how your meat is made, he wrote all so many companies, and he said it's easier to get a state secret than to see how your meat is processed. So I think that's very, very, very true. Okay, and then the second film was Skin Trade. What was that?
Yes.
What was that about?
Skin trade was an exposé about the fur industry. So really it was a deep dive into the fur industry. There was a lot of undercover work that was done. I spoke to a lot of fur industry individuals, fur
Did
designers,
you?
fur makers, pretending I was
Were you
somebody else.
incognito? I mean,
Yeah.
did they know what you were doing? Yeah,
No.
okay.
So I had a
Yeah.
lot of access. And it was a very, very interesting, the information that I got, which made for a really great documentary, but also very, very disturbing. And
Yeah.
so, if anybody who wears fur, they need to see Skin Trade. It's a great tool that's used, for, at fur protests, for people to give, to anybody, and just as an educational resource. It covers everything from how fur is made, to the, to leather, to the environmental impact and all of that. And so it's also talks about faux fur and really what goes into fake fur,
What,
which you need
really?
to be careful of because a lot of it is actually dog and cat fur because a certain percentage of it doesn't have to be labeled.
I did
So,
not know that. Okay. Wow.
The look of fur just
Interesting.
is fashionable and people shouldn't be wearing it. Just don't buy it because you
Okay.
don't know what's in it.
Interesting. I'm really happy to learn about the faux fur. Okay, and then the third one is sanctuary. If you want to just give us a little talk
Sanctuary
about
is
that.
my most recent one. It's actually a few years ago now, but we just kind of released it. And
Oh.
Sanctuary is a beautiful documentary, easy to watch. And not like Skin Trade, which is a little hard to watch, but
That was going to be one of my questions.
Sanctuary is very easy to watch. And it was just like a love letter basically to primates. But it's about primates in captivity. And I traveled all over the world to different sanctuaries. And you get to know a few different primates personally and their stories. And it's sad, because they live in captivity. And we cover their stories. Some are from the exotic pet trade, some are from vivisection, and some are from circuses, and now they live in sanctuaries. And we talk about their plight and what they've gone through and what they do go through now and learn about that. So
Well, so
it's tough.
I bet, and just a I had a was it just last week or the week before my podcast was on the a baboon sanctuary, which is here in Belize, but they have never been, I mean, it's only been in their natural habitat for 44 years. Just these women have been protecting these, they call them baboons locally, but they're black howler monkeys. And for 44 years, they're doing it totally volunteer, and it's a 20-mile sanctuary, and it protects many animals and many plants and many and many things that are on endangered species lists. But just yeah, you it's nice to know that there are sanctuaries that aren't even made just because people had to be think different animals had to be rescued. Like they've just always been there, but they've taken the from 600 when they started to I think 6,000 now. So it's been a very successful, no funding. This has been amazing. So
That's awesome.
those three films, where are they available on things like Netflix or how is one, are they all different ways that you can watch them, or how would people watch those?
Actually, I have Sanctuary right now on Unchained, Jane Gloz Mitchell. She's an amazing activist and she's
Oh,
got her own channel, so you can go on
okay.
to Unchained TV and get it there. And Skin Trade and Behind the Mask, you can just get on YouTube. They're all
Okay. Oh,
free.
really? Oh, I never
And
even
you can
thought of
also,
that.
I
Oh, my
just provide
goodness.
them for free. And you can
Wow.
buy them. I mean, they're really cheap. I have them on DVD on our website, Beagle Freedom Project, BFP.org. But I'm also
Okay.
happy to just send them to anybody who wants them too. So.
Well, if you can get them on YouTube, that's I mean, that says so much about you right there. You're providing those for free. You know, speaking, I before we leave the film part of this, how I'm just like you said, Skin Trade is a tough one to watch. I'm one of those people who can't watch very much of those things, but I'm wondering, like how do you deal with that with people who can't watch, either because they say they can't take it, which I fall into that. I'm sorry, but I really do. Or because they don't want to change. You know, I'll change. I just don't want to. I just feel like I will be traumatized, and I don't know. I don't feel like I need to. So I'm wondering, is that frustrating as hell for you to hear? You know, it probably is.
It's hard when people don't want to watch or listen because they want to just keep on doing what they're doing, but they still want to argue with me. It's like they want to judge my lifestyle or question what I do. But they want to keep what they're doing. They want to keep on, eating meat or living like, a cruelty lifestyle, a life of cruelty. or what I consider a life of cruelty, but yet they won't listen to anything I have to say about why what they're
like
doing.
Facts? Might,
yeah.
Like just the facts of the matter. Yeah.
Anything. Okay. That is really frustrating. So it's like, well, you know, you can go ahead on living your life, but don't question me. Don't make fun of me. Don't confront me. That's when it becomes frustrating. Like when the judgment comes in, I mean, we're not going to change everybody, you know?
Right.
I mean, I wish we could,
eventually. Yeah. Well, eventually, you know, in 100 years, I think we'll look back at these times very differently, but
yeah,
it's hard to
know. There won't be a choice, right? Because I mean, our environment is eroding and animals are dying.
Right.
There probably won't be a choice, but we'll
yeah,
see.
Well, we're all working for other things, but for a better outcome. But as far as you, when you go in and you're filming something really extremely painful, like how do you set your head for that? Because with someone who cares as much as you do, you care more than anybody else who's watching it probably, and yet you're the one who's going in and putting yourself in a situation. Is there some kind of a stabilizing or strengthening mindset that you take on? How do you do it?
I become an actor and I think about how I'm going to edit it. So like when I go into, let's say, a laboratory undercover or something like that, I'm a different person, obviously. And so I put on my game face, I'm an actor, and then I just think about getting the best footage I can get and how I'm going to get it so that I can change people, so that I can get the best angles and everything else. And it's all about
process.
Thinking how I can get that footage. And
but then you have to edit it.
The editing
in the privacy of your home.
That's when I cry. But going in there, I'm just stone faced. I get it. And I can do it pretty well. You know, it's later when I'm processing it all that the breakdown happens.
Yeah. And this has been how many years now that you've been doing this, would you say? I don't want you to reveal your age in it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, just look at Wikipedia. It doesn't matter. I don't care. 26 years.
Oh, all right. So have you developed some type of a strength when you're editing? Because I can't even, I don't know how, or when you're seeing things, have you toughened in a way?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, there's ebbs and flows of where I go through a period where I'm strong and I can handle everything. Yeah. And then sometimes everything comes crashing down. I think it sort of depends on what's happening in my life at the moment, right? Like if
that makes sense.
You know, yeah. Like if there's
how
a lot
strong you're
on,
feeling.
Yeah.
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 I know I asked, do you know Michael and Tim who, run the, oh my goodness, I feel terrible. I'm not going to remember the name. I interviewed them on my second one. Oh my goodness. I'm going to have to dub it in because I'm having one of those moments where I don't. They've been rescuing dogs all over the country. They're now in Tennessee. Anyway, I bet you know who they are, but I asked them when I interviewed them, you know, how do you, cause they go into the worst homes and zoos and illegal zoos and all that kind of thing and rescue, you know, like 40, 50 dogs that are in terrible conditions. And I asked them sort of similar question, like, how do you have the soft heart for this, especially, and then how do you manage it? And he said, I just think about how depressed I would be if there was something, if I couldn't do anything about it. Like, I know they exist and I'm doing something about it and they're all going to have a better life after this. And that's what makes me happy. So yeah, there's always, we all find our strategies.
I'm
dying that I can't remember because I know them very well. Okay. Hopefully they won't.
That happens to me all the time.
Well, let's talk about Beagle Freedom Project because is this taking the full ownership of your life for the last few years?
Oh yeah.
Well, let's talk. Yeah. I'm sure it's all encompassing.
Yeah.
Is that a beagle that we hear barking?
That's my Great Dane. I don't have a beagle.
I was going to ask you if you had a beagle. Well, okay, let's go to the beginning of it, because I honestly, when I heard Beagle Freedom Project the very first time, my understanding was different. I'm thinking it's all like, I didn't understand the scope of it. So it kind of doesn't give the impression of fully what it is, because I know it's a major, major undertaking and you're all over the world. So let's start with the beginning, how you got started with Beagle Freedom Project, or how you started it.
Sure. Sorry, should I just
It's okay.
I'm just going to.
We're dog friendly.
Come on, Maya. I know you're upset. Come on. Okay. Come on, Gracie. Okay.
All right. So I had a nonprofit that I'd started when I started making my films, called ARMY, Animal Rescue Media and Education, which was really to produce the documentary films and do a little rescue on the side of, you know, animals in local shelters and things like that. And eventually I got a call down the road from somebody who knew somebody in
don't worry. No, I really, I mean, unless it becomes too oppressive. We'll keep going.
I got a call from somebody who knew someone who worked in a laboratory in Northern California. They were closing for the holidays, and they were going to kill the beagles there and then just buy new ones when they came back in the new year.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And this was all kind of like new to me, like, wait, what? There was somebody who worked there who was just sort of like begging to release them instead of kill them. And she had convinced the hires up that to release them, and was trying to find homes.
Can you just say why they wouldn't? Because I know this is still going on. Why? What's the purpose in not giving them for a home? You know, putting them in homes, or giving them to
Well,
shelter?
I found out later, and literally they said to me, "We don't want people to know we test on dogs."
Oh.
Even though we weren't saying the name of the facility, they don't want the people to know that the industry tests on dogs.
Okay.
So we blew this industry up because people like were unaware that testing went on with dogs and cats.
Yeah.
Just like the ones with whom we share our lives. And so when we started pulling animals, you know, when we started rescuing them from this facility, this was the very beginning. Our first three major rescues were from this one facility. We were getting a lot of media. It was local media in the San Francisco, you know, Bay Area. But we never said the name of the place. They wigged out. And they called me and they said that they were going to stop releasing. And I like had a heart attack. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, we don't like this media. And I said, well, we've never said the name of the place. I don't understand it. They said, we don't want anyone knowing dogs are being tested on. So we're
what were they testing for? What was the, or can you say even now, can you say what they were doing?
They never told us exactly. I know that it was pharmaceuticals and toxins and things like that. We never knew exactly what they were testing for. So I was devastated. And I thought, oh my God, like I just killed all these dogs. They're not going to release them anymore.
You thought you took the responsibility because you'd been putting it in the media. I see.
Which was the whole point, to educate, not the whole point, but part of the point, to educate the world. This is going on. We need to stop this. And they said, we're stopping releasing them, which means we're going to kill them.
Yeah.
Fast forward, like a year later, we get an email from this woman, and it turns out I'm still releasing. Do you want to be on the podcast? Do you want to be on it? Come here. Come here, Maya. Come here.
I thought you'd never ask.
Come on. Come here. Come here. Come here.
Come here, Maya.
Come here, Maya. Let's see. Come here. Come here. Come. Come here. Come here. Okay. She's being shy now.
Look, camera shy. We'll see. Eventually we'll see her.
Yeah. So yeah, it turned out they were still releasing, but they lied to me. So that just kind of shows how
wow, devious, that's cruel, and that's just unusually cruel that they would do that too.
Right. I mean, these are people who torture animals, so of course I was relieved. But yeah, how disgusting that was of them.
And you went through a year of thinking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was our first rescue of two beagles, and then we sort of blew up after that. I mean, we got these two beagles, and it did rock my world, because in my head I thought, oh, they're going to be so happy, you know, they're going to run out of their crates, and they're going to just be so excited. But they weren't. They were scared to death. It took them 20 minutes to take their first steps out of their crate. They had never been outside. They'd never seen the outside world. They were panting, salivating. It's like nothing I'd ever seen. And I thought I kind of knew everything about vivisection. And, you know, I thought I have to do something about this and make this my life's goal to end this. And that's when Beagle Freedom Project was born.
Wow. Those first two, how did they finally come out onto the grass? And I mean, did they warm up to you guys, to whoever was there eventually?
Yeah, so the first beagle, Bigsby, he finally, after like 20 minutes, he took his first step on the grass, a very ginger step, and lifted his paw and put it back down. And then he walked over to Freedom's crate. We named him Freedom. And he touched his nose, and then Freedom came out of his crate. And then they sort of walked around. They were wobbly because they didn't have a lot of muscle tone.
Did they know each other before that day? Had they been together in the, so
they were
just
in the lab, but they didn't, they might've smelled each other, but
yeah.
And then they just started walking around, and then they started running, and they were very, very happy. They started doing zoomies and stuff like that. So
within an hour, they were acting relatively dog-ish.
Yeah.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Resilience.
Yeah.
So then you just said, that's it. We're focusing on stopping animal testing or beagles, or like, what was your initial thinking when you started the Beagle Freedom Project? What was the goal?
Well, I called it Beagle Freedom Project because beagles are the number one breed of dog used in testing. But my goal was never just rescue beagles. Of course, all breeds of dogs are used, and all animals are used. Mm-hmm. But since beagles are like the well-known breed used and the most common breed, I wanted to call it Beagle Freedom Project as sort of like a recognition. But since we've started, we've rescued all kinds of breeds of dogs, cats, pigs, horses, goats, sheep, alpaca, rabbits, ferrets, guinea pigs, you name it, all from animal testing. So there is no end to what the industry will do and who they will test on.
Wow, I did not know all this, so I'm kind of trying to process this unemotionally at the moment.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I mean, horses. Because people seem to have, and I don't count myself among them, but I know that just the way that society has kind of geared us, that people say, okay, well, you know, mice, okay, we don't like mice that much. Rats, okay, we don't like rats that much. You know, like there seems to be a pecking order that people will be okay with until there's some, maybe it's a rabbit or, you know, it just, as it gets closer to a pet, but obviously any kind of animal. But then of course people, I'm sure, always say to you, I'm totally saying making this up, but it just seems like they have to say yes, but people are more important, so we need to have everything tested so that it's okay for us. So how do you talk to people about that? You know, maybe it's a cancer cure or a, you know, eye replacement therapy or whatever. You know, there's so many things that they do test for that could be argued they help people ultimately. And
right. Well, luckily things just recently changed, which I'll talk about in a second, but before this great thing that just happened, you know, my argument has always been, let's just say somebody, cancer is a big one. People like to bring up cancer. So, you know, my response is that, you know, cancers probably affect all of us, you know, all of my family. And it's close to me and I don't want to be insensitive about it. However, there's still no cure, right? So, if you look at it that way, you look at all the decades of testing and the billions of dollars spent, including our own taxpayer dollars. And if you actually do the research and you look at the NIH funded studies done on animals, a lot of them are repetitive studies over and over and over again, just to collect data so that universities and other places can get grant money. It's very frustrating. The problem is that people like to say those things, but they haven't done their research. And I realize, yeah, it's a lot of research to do and they're not going to do it. But if you actually do your research, you're going to see that, these studies aren't like necessarily real. So what recently happened, which is amazing, is the passage of the FDA Modernization Act that passed in December. Yeah, it's so amazing. And so it's what we've all been saying as animal rights activists. For so long.
The FDA said that?
Basically, that's what the new law says. The law says the pharmaceutical companies can choose to test or not test for new drugs. They don't have to test on animals anymore.
That's just upsetting as it is good news. So it doesn't say don't test. It just says you can choose to test or not choose to test, but you'll still get FDA approval with that. Do they explain why? Do they say it's because I saw different people speaking about, like Cory Booker, who's already an animal, you know, activist, but saying that there have developed recently, alternative methods of testing that make it no longer necessary. But it's just odd that there's a day when all of a sudden that's not the case. You know, I don't know.
Oh, I'm with you. We've had a lot of these alternatives for a very long time.
Have we? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. So has there been, can you see any difference? This was last December that passed the House and Senate and became federal law, right? So now we're in May. Have you seen any change in the world of animal testing since then? Like all of a sudden there's a lot of animals to be rescued?
Yeah, not yet. I don't know that we'd see it quite yet. There's a lot of work still to be done in terms of that bill and, you know, educating people and things like that. We have had quite a few rescues since then. I'm wondering if it does have to do with that, but kind of thinking, I don't think so. But it is good. It gives me leverage to approach these private companies. That's next on the agenda is, why are you still doing this? You have a choice.
Well, and
of course we'll know the bad actors. So
I know one of the things that I listened to a few different conversations about it after I saw it passed. And, I know that startup cost to replace what they've been doing animal testing for all these years. And now they're going to do some computer testing or some different technique. I mean, I guess that's Yeah, that's why I'm wondering if there's a phase out period that they're gonna. Well, of course there is just naturally, because there's nothing that says you can't do it, so they can do continue doing it as long as they want. So, well,
Right.
okay, but it's all, kind of an interesting and complicated issue. So it's no
Yeah.
longer, quote, a necessary evil, though, which is what I think was the term that so many different people said.
That's a lot what a lot of people at in laboratories would say to me. A lot of people who would head up like the release is like people who would try to get the animals out would say like we hate this, but it's a necessary evil. Those are words they would use.
So, I mean, that was definitely a thought that I would have had, 10, 20 years ago for sure myself. So, I mean, I understand that we've been taught that. We've been taught a lot of things. But what confuses me now is this Beagle Freedom Bill, which has only passed, I think, in 13 states. That's probably not going to be a federal law. That I don't understand, right? It just requires companies to give these, just what you were talking about with that very first company, to take the animals after they've been spent, so to speak, and put them up for adoption as opposed to killing them. Why on earth, now that this onus is off them to do, is it the same thing? They still don't want people to know that they're doing animal testing? Like, why would 37 states still need to have laws that say put them up for adoption rather than killing them? Or do you know the answer to that?
Yeah, because
I
they're
wish you
still, I
did.
mean, they're, I mean, the reason that we started that signature legislation is because they're still killing them. We have to force them to release them or they're going to kill them because they do not want to release them. It is practically impossible to get these animals out of labs. People have no idea how hard it is. We have to rely on whistleblowers. We have to rely on, it's hard to get these animals out of labs. Let me just put it that way. That's the reason why we went to this. It is a very welfarist, very soft law. I agree. Sure, it's not ending animals. I get all of that, but we have to force them to release these animals because they won't otherwise. Period.
Oh, I think it's a very important law because the ramifications of it are much more than maybe it looks on the surface. It's because it makes them think, it makes everyone think about why is this even happening. So, I mean, it just seems like a critical law. And I
I
think,
mean, we're still going to need it through, even though the FDA Modernization Act is passed, because they're still not going to release them, I promise you.
It's very, very, very upsetting.
Yeah.
Animal freedom. Oh my gosh. Animal Rescue Corps. That's the name of Michael and Tim's
Oh,
dog.
Animal Rescue.
Animal
Okay.
Rescue Corps.
Yeah, I know
It just
Animal Rescue Corps.
decided to pop into my head. Because the reason it did pop in my head, I think, is because I talked to them about Enviro. Was that how you pronounce it? Which,
Invigo.
oh, Envigo. Yeah. Sorry. Can you talk about that a little bit? What happened? Because I don't think most people watching this anyway would know about what that is. I never knew there was a USDA, I never knew any of what was going on there, so.
So, one of our regulatory agencies is called the USDA, and the USDA is supposed to go in and check on laboratories and make sure that laboratories are doing the right thing, that the animals are
Animal
being
testing
fair.
laboratories, you mean?
Animal testing laboratories, yeah.
Okay.
And that animal or breeding facilities or breeders, I mean, they regulate all of these places,
Oh.
and make sure that the animals are being cared for, that they're following all the laws, that all the protocols are being followed, all of that stuff. USDA doesn't do their job, period. What was happening was that Envigo is this huge breeding, one of Envigo's locations in Cumberland, Virginia. They had about 4,000 beagles. Was a very large breeding facility, and they did some testing there. And the USDA had gone there based on some whistleblower complaints because they hadn't gone there like they were supposed to, and they found horrible things, horrible conditions. This is public record. You can look it up. You can see the videos they uploaded of these puppies dead in corners. I mean, just awful stuff. They kept going back and giving Indigo chances. Correct this problem. Correct that problem. Every time they went back, it was worse.
Wow.
Why they didn't shut down Indigo and actually give these people like citations and actually get these people arrested for animal felony abuses, I have no idea why. But what happened was, is when we found out about it, it was like a public campaign against Indigo. We were involved in other animal organizations were involved in a public pressure campaign against Indigo. And it took us to get involved. And then it took politicians to get involved to actually shut down Indigo. And that finally happened. And Indigo got shut down. And then those 4,000 beagles got dispersed amongst us and other animal rescue groups to be placed. But Indigo still has other locations. Indigo is owned by Inativ. And there are still other locations people
Who's
don't
Inativ?
Need to know about. Inativ is a company that owns Indigo now.
And I mean, but what do they make, or do you know?
It's an animal testing pharmaceutical industry company. INOTIV, and they have various other companies they own in other locations with beagles that people need to know about, because it's not over just because Indigo in Cumberland, Virginia is over. It's all over the place.
Have those 4,000 beagles been rehomed or homed? I guess not rehomed. Have they been adopted? Or that's a lot of dogs.
Yeah. I mean, I know that the ones that we got are a great home. I don't know about all of them.
Well,
so
I knew that Animal Rescue Corps, I know, did a number, hundreds of them. So that's, I think, hundreds. So that's how I first heard about it. And I know those, they had all made it to homes, but 4,000 is a lot of dogs to find. And especially that they've been traumatized. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, the ones we got are in great homes. In fact, Megan and Harry adopted one of them.
And, I heard that. Yeah. How did that happen? Harry and Megan adopting, they already did that. Okay. Oh, that's exciting. They weren't one of the Indigo pups necessarily, were they? Or were they?
Yes, they adopted.
Oh, they were specifically? Oh, wow. Okay, that's beautiful.
They adopted an Indigo mommy from us.
So, that's so nice. So has that sort of risen, raised awareness, I should say, for your adopting or for your organization? Because, you know,
when
they bring with them a lot of,
It was all over the media. It was crazy.
Yeah. And it raised some awareness of your organization, would you say, or do you think it did?
I think so.
I mean, like with a positive effect, hopefully.
I hope so. I don't know. It was definitely, at least it raised awareness for the right reasons, you know, in terms of like adopting an older dog, because, you know, what's so great about Harry and Megan is that they didn't want the puppies. They wanted the older mom, the breeder mom. And
really
that was
wonderful.
The whole point, was getting that message out there that people should be adopting, you know, the ones that nobody else wants. And and that was the message. And I think that the media made that clear.
Well, certainly the best dog I've ever had was an adopted 10-year-old. I mean, literally the far and above the one who stole my heart, had him for 6 years, and it was like wonderful. So I would really encourage people to do that, because they just are lovers from the beginning. You know, they walk in and they're happy.
Yeah,
at least mine was. So there's a couple quick things I wanted to make sure that we focus on, and one of them is how you educate. And because I love your mission, maybe you should say it, three words:
educate, right? Legislate, liberate.
Yeah, I love that mission, and I love the mission video that you have too, and I would really encourage people to go watch it, because it's just the right touch of emotion and clarity, and it was like watching a documentary in itself. It's really, it's wonderful. You did an incredible job with that video, but so I loved it. But on your website, you have two things I want to talk about, one of which is the classroom, the BFP in the classroom, that anyone, I think, can you talk about that? Anyone can virtually bring you in to learn, teach the kids.
What do
Yeah,
you
I'm
teach?
glad you brought that up. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
Anyone, anywhere, in Belize, any country, we've done countries, we've done India, we've done all over the world. You can sign up, have teachers, anybody sign up. You can go onto our website, BFE in the Classroom, and just pick a date, sign up for it, and sign up for your classroom of all ages. We do it virtually over Zoom or whatever's easiest, and we give a little classroom talk about, who we are, what Beagle Freedom Project is, and the importance of having respect for animals. And just depending on the age group, we cater it that way to being kind to animals, what being cruelty-free means,
Really?
all
That's
of those
so
type of.
it's live? I mean, it's you speaking. It's not a, oh, I thought it was a recorded course or something. So it's
No.
actually you going into the classroom. That's
Yeah.
amazing. That's so much more powerful.
Yeah, we answer questions from the kids. We usually have one of our beagles with us on our lap to show a rescued beagle. We show the tattoo in their ear. We talk about where they came from and what happens to them, the importance of rescuing instead of purchasing an animal, all those things,
Oh,
and
I love that.
then we send them after the class. We'll mail them some cool stuff, like little kids' wristbands and some informational material and stuff. And we've had some great outcomes. I mean, we get some great stuff back from the kids. In fact, one of our classes in Oregon, after they were so inspired, they actually reached out to their senator and they started the Beagle Freedom Law in Oregon by themselves, and it passed.
Oh my goodness. That is a win. Talk about a cause and effect. You educate, you inspire,
Yep.
inspire. Wow. Okay, so that is definitely something I want to get out to people to take advantage of. I mean, I don't know how many you can do physically, but I guess you'll do as many as you
I
can.
don't do them myself, but I mean, it's all of our staff rotates doing them.
Okay.
So,
Oh, that's incredible. I'm definitely gonna. There's a school 2 blocks from here that I'm gonna go marching over to.
yeah,
So
that'd be
I
great. Oh, that
can't
would
wait because
be
they speak
wonderful.
English in Belize. So, that not all
Perfect.
countries, because I'm sure it's harder. Because I know you guys are very active around the world. You're in the UK now, and I know you've been in Latin America, the Middle East. I mean,
Everywhere.
that's massive. Yeah. Your impact is so broad, and that's very exciting. And well, the other piece, in addition to the classroom I want to talk about, was it's a cruelty cutter app, which I was thrilled to download and start using.
Yay.
Can you talk about that? It's so easy and it's just like a no-brainer for
I love our app. I love our cruelty cutter
Oh, you
app. I encourage
should.
everybody to use it. Yeah. We're actually right in the middle of a huge upgrade. So like I know it's not working on some people's like newer phones or something, but we have I think like 4 months to go and it's gonna be like massively even better and upgraded, just so people listening know. Yeah, it's awesome. So it's a free app, and all you do is you scan the barcode on any item, and it tells you instantly if it's cruelty-free or not. So it's really easy to go shopping, you're at the market, and you can share your results. You can easily share your results on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can email people. I call it Activism 101 because a lot of people ask me like, oh, there's so much I want to do, but like I don't have time to volunteer. I can't foster. I don't have money to donate. And I'm like,
Here's
well, you go
10
shopping.
seconds.
I'm like, you go shopping, right? They're like, yeah. I'm like, here's what you do. Use the app. Use the app. So the app is great. And what I want people to know about the app is that it's also your activism tool. So please, if you scan an item and it tests on animals, hit that boycott button. And hit the bite back because we
Hit
get a
the
bunch
what?
of there's a boycott button and then there's just click that. And if you want to click the bite back, you can also share the results, which tags the company. Yeah. So we get the results on the back end and we're waiting for BFP. We are waiting for enough data so we can buy like a couple shares in those cruel companies.
and say to them, hey, you lost $1 million in revenue just from our users alone using the app. It's time to stop testing on animals.
Yeah, you
But
are a
we need
force
people
to
to
be
hit the
reckoned
boycott.
with.
We need people to hit the boycott button, though, or we don't get the data.
Okay, I'm glad you really stressed that. I don't think I got that far. I was just doing it with some of my products around here that were already in here when I moved in, and a lot of cleaning products. And yeah, I mean, it was just like they were all. But what I really am excited to do is you take it into like a makeup store, like a Sephora or a Ulta or something like that, because I have long, again from Jessie, my daughter, I've long not, but very, very careful about especially any kind of hair body type products, to make sure that they weren't animal tested. But the knowledge level in stores is not good, and there's a lot of misinformation. I won't name names about what stores yet because it's but I'm you can say, oh no, you're wrong. I mean, you can just take that app into the store and say, because people would say, yeah, well, because what often happens is they say, well, they don't animal test, but they're not excuse me, they're not they don't have the stamp of that it costs
The
so much
bunny,
money to get the bunny that shows that you are. So that how does that work? So if I what if somebody doesn't have the funds to get that certification? Is there a way that your app can tell, or is it mostly just testing to see if they've been certified?
No, we know no matter what. So they don't have to have the
Oh.
bunny or anything on there.
Oh.
We independently verify every single
Okay.
product. So once you scan it, our app verifies it no matter what, whether there's a
Okay,
bunny on
that's
it or not.
huge. That changes everything for me because that's what they rely on. And I know it's not accurate, but okay, that's really helpful. Well, we're kind of at the end of our hour, and one of the last questions I wanted to ask you is what kind of advice you would give to somebody who wants to get involved in animal advocacy or have a positive impact against animal testing or any kind of animal welfare issues. And I love the app and the education. Is there anything else that you would advise? Like it's been, you've been in it quite a while now.
I would say as there's so many things to do, that it can be kind of like, where do I start? Because there's so many
Yeah,
forms of animal
right.
cruelty, unfortunately. I would say start with the topic that touches you the most, whether it be, animals in the food industry, animals used for entertainment, animals, in vivisection, and really focus on that one thing and think about, what your particular craft is, whether you're great at, videotaping, photography, street
Writing,
activism, writing,
speaking,
exactly.
yeah.
Yeah, any of those things, and focus on those things. And then maybe reach out to an organization who's already working on those things and ask if you can volunteer or get involved, get a job with them. I think that's a great way to start and then get
Yeah.
your foot in the door that way.
Okay. That's very good advice. I can attest to the fact that volunteering is a great way to learn whether you want to be in something or not, and it connects you with so many different people, and so it's a fantastic way to do it. And well, I can't thank you enough. This has actually been very, very instructive to me because a lot of times I know a lot about the thing before I go on with the person, but I haven't known as much about this particular area. So I could tell you that just for me, this has really been educational and inspiring. And Shannon, I just really appreciate everything that you're doing for the world, for animals.
Thank you so much.
You're epitome of someone how we change the world. So that's how you do it. So thank you.
Oh,
I'll put
thank
all the
you.
links. I'll put all the links for the app and for the education and obviously just for the website on the show notes. So if anybody's interested in learning more or helping out, then they can go check that out. So thank you.
Awesome.
Keep
Thank
going.
you.
Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
for what
Thanks
you
for
do.
doing the show, and thank you for what you do and
Okay.
putting all this out there for people. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, good. Thank you. All right. Take care. Bye
You
bye.
too.